This is February 18th, 1992. We're at the Orioles Museum. Shirley Bradley, Lisa Fine, interviewing Jack Down, volunteer at the Orioles Museum and photo archivist. We're going to be talking to him about his real memories.
First thing we need, because we haven't gotten this information from you before, is just, you know, your address and your phone number.
Oh, 2510 Hazlitt Road.
Okay. Right by me.
Yeah.
Is that in Hazlitt or East Lansing? I see it right near me.
Where are you?
In White Hills.
Oh.
4823. Curtis is where I live. And your phone is?
351-6751.
6751. Okay. And were you born here in Lansing?
Yeah. I was the first cesarean in Sparrow Hospital.
Oh my goodness!
That's really interesting.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
Oh my goodness!
Was this a new procedure?
They just hadn't done it there before.
No, they just hadn't done it.
So were you coming out feet first? Was that it?
I wouldn't come.
You weren't coming.
You know something?
I said, I like it in here.
It was nice and warm in there.
And what year was that?
1924.
Sparrow Hospital. Were your parents from here, around here too?
My mother's from Alma. My dad was from Parenton, Ithaca area.
Okay. And were they farmers up there? Do they keep their farm?
No, my mother's brother got the farm.
Oh, okay. When they came to Lansing?
No.
Oh.
Well, my grandfather made a deal with him that he'd take care of him in his old age, and so he gave him the farm.
Uh-huh.
Much to the annoyance of the rest of the family.
Oh, yeah. He didn't want to divide it all up amongst them.
He didn't want to divide it.
Yeah.
So my cousin still has it.
Oh, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. Up north of here.
In Alma. Mm-hmm.
Oh, great. So how long did they stay there? And you were born in Lansing.
Well, my father came to Michigan State.
Oh.
Became quite a well-known agriculturalist.
Oh.
In fact, when he died, we were kind of amazed. I think my mother and I were both impressed. Death notices from California and all over Florida and all over.
Did he teach over there or just worked at Extension?
He worked in farm crops, experimental, but he did a lot of teaching.
That's fascinating. When it was the Michigan Agricultural.
When it was MAC.
And
when it was MS.
Mm-hmm. This is like in the 30s or 40s?
No,
or?
He was there from 1917 till he died in the 50s.
Oh, quite a long time then. He started to change a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's interesting.
He was head of the department for a little while. He didn't want that.
This is different than the other stuff you've encountered, so I don't know where to go from here. he was able to make a living from this work that he did through the university.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Did you go to MSU, too?
Yeah.
You did?
Mm-hmm.
Did you go in engineering?
I went first in liberal arts because I didn't know what to do. Then I went to engineering and couldn't make it.
Uh-oh.
And at least I wouldn't work hard enough to make it. So then I went to business administration and got a degree with a minor in engineering, which turned out to be a rather unusual at that time degree.
I know,
very,
very good,
very
now.
Useful one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They encourage that now, in fact.
Mm-hmm. Huh. And then my next one was in school administration and engineering.
Mm-hmm.
And then my last one was in international education and development and a minor in psychology.
Wow. A lot of degrees.
So it made a very good combination.
Yeah. And so did you go straight from school to Rio to work?
No. I was office manager of technical drawing and design. That was in East Lansing, which was a little aborted thing that a professor of mine tried.
Mm-hmm.
And, people would come in and I want this designed, and then you'd go out and you'd have a list of engineers and so forth at MSU and students too, who would then design it for you, and they'd charge you so much to design it, and you'd charge that person more.
Oh.
But they didn't know how to run it. They really didn't. Every customer they got, they scared him away. Mm. And I could see the handwriting on the wall. It wasn't going to go. And because I had several customers very happy to come in and leave their job with us, and then the boss would come in and he'd say, "Well, I'm not sure if we can do that," and so on and so on. "Well, are you sure you can get someone to do that?" And then, of course, the guy would, "Oh, well, you can." Well, and the next thing we knew, the job was gone.
Yeah. Mm.
I don't think we ever did complete a job, except a couple I completed.
So you moved on from there.
So I moved on from there. I heard Rio was looking for an assistant sales engineer.
Okay.
And I went and I worked with R.M. Palmer, Robert, I think it was, M. Palmer. I was there a year and a half. And sales engineering is the go-between between sales and engineering. And we had to put out all the booklets and drawings and body clearance diagrams, as they would call them, where you have a drawing of a chassis and you know that your wheels are going to come up so far and this is going to open so far and this has to be here.
Mm-hmm.
And when someone is making a body for a chassis, which Rio sold a lot of those, they have to have this body clearance diagram. I made those.
Mm-hmm. What year did you start there?
Oh, you know, that's the thing. I went there in 40... I can't tell you whether I went there in 47 or 8.
Okay.
That was about a year and a half.
Mm-hmm. Were you in the service at all?
Yeah.
You were?
During college? I joined the Army Air Force in 41. Went in 42 and got a disability discharge and was out before the end of 42.
Oh.
And then I worked at Nash Calvinator here in town making airplane propellers.
And so you did war work?
Mm-hmm, but I went to school at the same time.
Oh, you went to school too. Did you just apply to Rio because it was a place to get a job, or did you want to work there?
Both.
It was both. They were looking for work.
I had, when I was in the Army, I had bought a 1912 Rio from a junkyard here where it's an empty building now on the corner of Jolly and Okemos Road.
Oh, sure. I know exactly where that is.
And Pades it was. And I bought a 1912 Rio there. And I had always been interested in Rios.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know when I got my second Rio, whether I was there at Rio or not, but at one time I had every model that Rio ever built except the Flying Cloud. No, except the Rio Royale.
Uh-huh, the one they made in the 30s.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I had a Royale too because I had that 36 Rio.
Uh-huh.
But I meant the big boxy,
yeah,
30s.
The gangster car.
The gangster car.
So it was an appealing place to work for you.
It was an appealing place to work for me. Mm-hmm. And I was driving a 22 Rio at the time,
mm-hmm,
which intrigued them.
Mm-hmm.
And being an indestructible car, well, I drove it for years.
Yeah, it must have attracted a lot of attention.
It was a well-built car.
It was a well-built car. I always tell the story. I was driving down Michigan Avenue and saw somebody I knew, waved at them. And they didn't see me, so I waved more madly. And then when I looked around, here was a Willys America, dead still in front of me for a stoplight.
Oh!
I did lock my brakes, all two of them, and hit him, bent his frame. He couldn't shut his door, smashed up the back of his car. He got out of his car holding his neck and his back.
Oh, my goodness.
No.
And I didn't even scratch my bumper. I didn't break a headlight. I didn't dent anything on that Rio.
My goodness.
I can just imagine.
Well, police reports. Damage to Willys, extensive. Damage to Rio, none. It felt just like their trucks. And it just ran
built
and ran and ran. It was built to last. It's still running. But I don't have it.
Oh, where is it?
No, I was in Texas the last time.
Oh, you sold it. And how many Rios did you say you've had?
Well, I had a 1908,
12.
Oh my gosh, you
a 12, a 16, a 22, a 27, and a 36.
Do you have any of those still?
No.
What you wish you did?
Yeah. Now I have a 33 self-shifter, but it's a what they call a basket case. I mean, it's a genuine basket case.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all there. It's complete. I haven't get started on it.
So how long did you work there?
Just a year and a half.
Just a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened then?
Well, then I went and worked for Standard Oil.
Oh.
And that was such a wretched company. To this day, I won't buy anything from Standard Oil.
Mm-hmm. But that was the extent of your work.
That was the extent of my work at Rio. And one of the jobs I had, I mean, I was a gopher, no doubt about it. I mean, I was just a young kid who could do all the mechanical drawings that they needed.
Yeah.
And who liked to write, and still do. And so putting out the sales literature and putting out those body clearance diagrams suited me real well.
Yeah. How come the job ended? Did you just think you could get a better opportunity somewhere else?
They hired someone else who was a very good engineer. And I don't think to this day they wanted an engineer in that department, but it made me kind of mad. Standard came along and offered me a good job, and I took it.
You didn't have any seniority or anything so far to worry about because you hadn't been along yet.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who did you work for?
R.M. Palmer.
R.M. Palmer, I'm sorry, you didn't tell us that. What kind of pay scale was there for you then?
Oh. Enough so that a couple of years later when I went into teaching and I wasn't making $3,000, it was an increase.
Oh, so it wasn't a very good...
Well, nobody was.
Yeah, after the war.
Yeah, in the late 40s, I mean, if you made $2,500... a year, you were paid well enough, and you could live on it.
Mm-hmm. Could you support a family on it?
Well, I don't know about a family, but my wife was teaching, and we didn't have any kids for 4 years. We thought of that, and one Christmas we raised boxer dogs, and our dog had 11 pups, and we sold them for $75 to $85 a piece.
Wow.
I've never been so rich in my life to this day.
Yeah.
I mean, if we saw something that cost, of course, a couple hundred dollars, then was a lot of money. If we saw something that cost a couple hundred dollars, we bought it if we wanted it.
Mm-hmm.
She was driving a car that cost $200. I was driving a car that cost $25. And then my Rio. And neither one of them ever took any expense. Our mortgage payment was $32.
Oh God, that's unimaginable now. $32.
Our taxes were nothing.
Oh.
And you could buy reams of groceries for $10.
Oh, yeah. We lived like king and queen.
Did you live in Lansing or East Lansing? Then?
Meridian Township.
Meridian.
Mm-hmm.
So it was pretty out there.
Mm-hmm. Well, we lived right near where Marvel School is.
Oh,
that was Meridian
sure.
Township then.
Sure.
Then the city came out and grabbed us and brought us in, so we moved out again.
Uh-huh.
And that's where we are.
Yeah. You sort of have been implying that the Rio was a good place to work. Certainly
I enjoyed it.
Standard Oil at later.
I started to say I was a gopher.
Yeah.
And every time that somebody of any importance I know came, my job was to take them through the factory.
Oh.
I know one time I took the president of Volvo.
So oh,
I remember
yeah.
that.
Uh-huh.
But I took a lot of people through. And I used to get out into the factory probably once every week.
Uh-huh.
And maybe more. And I'd take somebody through. And so I got to know the factory, even though my job was up in the front office.
Uh-huh.
You were given tours. You'd go through most of the main plant?
Oh, I'd take them through the whole thing. It was a big plant. See, Rio was exceptional in that it stamped its own bodies
mm-hmm.
and made its own engines. Where most of the, I mean, they weren't the hugest truck manufacturer at the time, although when I was there, we were consistently putting out 125 trucks a day.
Hmm. And a lot of them for the Army, right?
And a lot of them for the Army. Not so much then, because the Army didn't need them.
Yeah, war was over.
War was over.
Well, but they picked up again later for
they picked up again.
For Korea.
Oh, at one time, Rio and GM were the suppliers for the Army. Later on, as I understand it, and I wasn't there, Rio made a point of making Army trucks at cost to keep the line going. That was when they were putting out 125 trucks a week.
So production had dropped.
Production had dropped considerably.
Yeah.
And Rio was a busy plant when I was there. And so they had put out the Army trucks at cost, and they're trying to make money on the civilian trucks. And of course, that was what basically happened. They slipped on one of those biddings to the Army, and were losing money hand over fist on one of their big jobs. And they asked the Army to increase the amount. And where when a Chrysler Corporation asked for something very similar, they got it.
Rio didn't. Yeah.
As I read about this man, I don't know how they pronounce his name. I call it Capert, but someone the other day
Capert.
Would call him Capert.
The men that we've interviewed have called him Capert.
Capert, yeah. I mean, C-A-E looks like K to me.
Mm-hmm.
But I have a sneaking suspicion, because I've been so critical of the man, that when he bought it, he really meant to make it go.
Oh, really?
I think maybe he did.
In the very beginning?
In the very beginning, because he did a lot in making Rio a real beautiful truck. And it was already a good truck.
He changed the design or the...
Well, you could buy more paint combinations and really fantastically beautiful designs and so forth. The truck was an eye-catcher. A lot of chrome on it. Every now and then you see a truck on the road now that you know the man who's driving it owns it.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got the bumpers chromed and the exhausts are chrome and it's painted with the old circus curlicues and so forth.
Yeah.
And it's a work of art. Well, Rio's, you could buy them that way.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know whether he went into it saying, well, if it doesn't go, I'll wipe it out and make money that way, or whether that came up later. I really don't know. Because in the end, he was a real bastard.
Yeah. So we've heard.
Mm-hmm.
I've got some interesting literature you might like to look over later. I brought in that was Mr. Rankin.
Yeah, what's Mr. Rankin?
Well, the state of Michigan passed the law against what he did after he did it.
Oh, is that right?
About taking the employee's pension fund?
Taking the employee's pension fund.
Yeah.
Within the year, I think it was within the year, it was illegal.
Sometimes it takes an injustice to bring about a law that should have been in place in the first place.
I've always been surprised that one of those workers didn't just go and shoot him.
I've heard that there were several threats against his life and that he had bodyguards, but he still has bodyguards. He lives back in Vicksburg, Mississippi, where he came from.
Oh,
and
well, he was from Alma when he came here.
That's true. He came from Vicksburg, Mississippi.
Oh, he did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he did. And he's quite an entrepreneur, and he owns the town practically down there, what I've heard and read.
This last summer, I visited the Rio plant in Harrisburg.
Oh, I wanted to talk to you about that.
What,
tell us about
Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
You see, the Osterlunds were their biggest dealer. And I don't know, it probably took them a long time. He was busy, and I didn't really sit down and talk with him, although he was awfully nice, took me to the plant. Jim Osterlund, who was the son of the man who started the factory. My guess is it took them a while to get their nerve up to do it. I mean, that's quite
well,
a...
That.
Well, I mean, here Rio just gone bankrupt.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're going to take that name, or Diamond Rio, and take that name and start another factory. And you don't do that lightly.
When would that have been? In
well,
the late 70s?
That was 78, I believe.
They weren't producing those any trucks or anything like that before this? Before?
No, they were just the sales.
Dealers.
The dealer.
They were the dealer.
In Pennsylvania.
Okay.
And that, the East. They were the East Coast distribution point.
Then they decided to start producing their
own. So they started producing their own reel.
What's a change from being a distributorship to being a...
Quite a bit. But they waited nearly 4 years in there before they started. And they've been, I think they feel they've been quite successful.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this last year, they only produced 200 trucks because everybody is down.
Yeah.
And but he says, we made money on every one because we don't build one until it's sold.
And that was the old real philosophy.
Yes.
And
yes.
Do you know what Mack Truck lost last year?
No.
I think it was $280 million.
Real trucks are made in just about anything anybody would want, like they used to be if you had a special order?
No. You buy their standard truck. It's called the Rio Giant.
Oh.
And the Diamond Rio Giant. And it is. It's 7 feet to the nameplate. The nameplate was far above my head. And you have to buy that. But then you can buy that in any length wheelbase within practicality. Or body style with a cab, whatever you want.
Different specifications.
Different specs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They've been making cabs that would haul rigs like a
you can get a non road rig. You can get a sleeper if you want.
Delivery trucks.
And well, nothing small.
I really meant the bigger delivery trucks, but small.
Basically, what they're building is off road. Delivery trucks for gravel.
Oh,
really? Heavy duty.
Big heavy duty things.
Yeah.
They have a local company that they discovered a couple of years ago that now will make a package dump body. And I forget how many tons.
Did they have? How could they go ahead and use the name again?
They bought it.
They bought it. They bought the rights and the patents and whatever. Well, that must have been an expensive proposition to get started.
To get started, you bet. That's why I think that they waited so long.
Where in Pennsylvania is this?
Harrisburg.
In Harrisburg.
Well, I looked in the phone book and I couldn't find it. And I was there and I wanted to see it. And then I looked under truck manufacturing, and sure enough, what did they call it? It had some other name. And I call up, and the girl on the phone, she says, Diamond Rio. That sounded so nice.
That again.
Yeah. And they have a 1911 Rio sitting in their showroom.
Yeah,
and,
I do.
Mm-hmm.
How many people does this factory employ, would you think?
They were, as he said, on no sales vacation. They had closed down for 2 weeks. Nothing was going on when I was there. There were 4 or 5 employees. I really don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But there have to be quite a few dozen.
Yeah.
I'm just curious. I was just thinking from the old days of Diamond Rio.
Oh,
I'm
when I was there and we were making 125 trucks a day, there was thousands of employees.
Yeah.
That was a busy plant.
Do you remember anything about safety or working conditions or?
Well, it was an awfully old plant. Remember when it caught fire or when it was burned or whatever,
mm-hmm.
after the thing was empty? I really think it was burned.
We heard that from other people, too.
Yes,
I
know.
It's usually off the record, though.
I have no proof.
Yeah.
That's just my own suspicion.
Suspicion. Mm-hmm.
And especially your stories that you told me confirm it.
Why did you think that perhaps it had been set?
To get rid of it.
Because it would be cheaper than tearing it down?
Cheaper than tearing it down, and also probably it was insured.
Insurance money.
Yeah, probably a little bit. But it was an awfully old plant. In fact, when we come out of the offices, the first part of the plant we went into was the original 1905 plant. Wood floors and everything. That's why it burned.
All that oil soaked in.
Just like our Bates building here.
Mm-hmm.
Big wooden beams, wooden ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
Was that the portion that would have been, say, Cedar and Baker, right in that corner?
No.
Would that have been the original?
No, it was the one that went along the railroad tracks.
Okay.
Right behind the...
across from the depot.
Across from the depot.
And behind the clubhouse?
Yeah, well, behind the clubhouse. And see, the clubhouse originally, that was a big kind of a park. If you look at the old pictures.
Oh, really? When did they build
the clubhouse? The Rio Field.
Mm-hmm.
1917.
Was it 17?
Yes.
Okay. See, they've been going more than 10 years then.
Right. That's right. I've read a lot about how the boys after work would go out into the field and play games, sports, and
I heard that,
like,
but
that.
I didn't, couldn't picture where the fields were, because
right,
I didn't think about it being where the clubhouse is.
And then the main office was the next building south. Mm-hmm. Then the engineering building had been built later. I don't know when.
Is that where you were?
No, I was in the main office.
You were in the main office building.
Right there facing Washington.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever go to the clubhouse for events?
Were they having much in the 40s?
I don't remember them having much.
Maybe
yes, 40s. There were things went on there, but I didn't.
Mm-hmm. You didn't really follow it then? Mm-hmm. Did people use it, though? Other people, workers,
Light
workers.
Yeah, the place you go to movies.
Movies there.
Like, I think the radio station was in it.
Well, yeah, the radio station was still going.
WREO.
Mm-hmm. At one time, it was in the building across the street, I've been told.
Yeah.
But they probably moved it.
Well, I don't know. I'm sure it was there.
Yeah.
But I never went up to it.
I don't remember my mother saying much about the clubhouse either. She worked there from during the war until early 50s.
We had some friends that lived down on Baker in that area.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember walking up from their house to see the movies in the real clubhouse when I was a little kid.
Mm-hmm.
In the 20s.
Oh, in the 20s you went to see the movies there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We've heard a lot of people have memories about that and how wonderful it was to be able to go. And people sneaking in to see the films, even if their parents didn't really work there.
Yeah, and of course it was perfectly safe to walk up and down the street then, too.
Yes. That's another way that things have changed.
Now, you were saying earlier that you had some memories of the strike and the Lansing labor holiday.
Well, I remember that. My father was very conservative, and so therefore was I. And of course, they met down here in Lansing. And then they walked out.
This is for the labor holiday or the strike?
The labor holiday.
In June of 1937.
Yeah.
Right.
They walked out. They walked down Michigan Avenue and walked out to East Lansing. I'm not sure where they were met by the college students, but I would say it's pretty close to Harrison.
Right. The Red Cedar, because they called it the Battle of the Red Cedar.
They called it the Battle of the Red Cedar, and the students threw some into the Red Cedar.
Did you see any of this, or you just heard it from your dad?
No, I heard it.
You just heard it.
What did your dad seem to think of it?
Oh, he thought that was great.
That the students whooped him, right?
The students
right.
whooped him.
Oh, so he didn't see it from the
no.
workers' end of it.
Mm-mm.
Were people in Lansing frightened by it at all? Because, you know, there was a lot of strikes and sit-downs and things going on at that time.
Flint, of course, was the center of a lot of the more violent things.
Yes.
I don't remember Lansing being too violent. No, I don't remember anything about people being really upset.
No, it seems to me that if you call it a labor holiday, it wasn't the kind of thing people were worried about.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't like a takeover or a...
No, I don't think we really thought anything too drastic was going to come from it.
Uh-huh.
And I think that a lot of people, at least in our group, and this would be mostly college, really felt it was illegal to sit down in a plant and take it over.
Uh-huh.
And that was their basis. Whether the people had more wages coming or not,
right.
You know, that was illegal.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't do
it's
it.
Illegal. That's why the students were...
That's why the students...
They were coming at it from the other side of the
building. I think so. Mm-hmm. I don't think anyone begrudged people getting paid a decent day's wage.
Mm-hmm.
I never heard that. Never heard, they're making too much money now. And they weren't.
Well, working people didn't make very much money
then
either.
No.
So in 37, right?
Yeah, and we had people in our own family. Now, our family was lucky that we had this family farm.
Mm-hmm.
So nobody ever went hungry.
Right.
And my uncle, I mean, you stop it there and you go home loaded with apples or whatever was available. Milk.
Mm-hmm.
I thought of that. So we never went hungry, but I had an uncle who was a stubborn old coot who was a blacksmith and would not do anything but blacksmithing. And he had a horrible time financially.
He didn't see the handwriting on the wall.
No,
but.
Well, he wouldn't. Yeah,
yeah,
everybody pointed it out to him, but he was blind.
During the period of time that you were working there, maybe some of the big strikes were over, but I'm thinking after the war, there was the coal strike and the steel strike and the railroad strike and the
But nothing much in Lansing that I remember.
People were out of work.
Oh, people were out of work.
Yeah, because of these other things. I don't mean...
But
that's the effect.
But 48.
The reel was down.
See, I graduated in 46. And I was a hot commodity. Because, see, a lot of the Army people were still in school. And I was out.
You were out already.
I was out already.
Mm-hmm.
And getting a job was just no problem. If you had an education at all. Now, I don't know how many people were out of work, really. But things were moving then. I mean, like 125 trucks a day.
That's
rather astounding production. And I know we used to sit and watch the production figures of White, because White seemed to be the most equal company that we knew of.
White Motors. Yeah.
And, of course, even while I was there, White was trying to buy the Rio engine.
Uh-huh.
Oh, it was.
Plant. And, or at least the rights to it. And White was producing just about the same as we were.
Mm.
And I think most companies, and of course there were a lot of little companies producing. I mean, Duplex was here in town producing madly.
Well, it was a good time to work in because it was.
Mm-hmm.
And Rio was a very Lansing associated.
Rio was a family.
Family oriented.
Yeah.
Even he felt that. And we've been there just a year and a half.
Yeah.
We keep hearing this.
Rio was a family.
Yeah. A Lansing based
family.
A Lansing based
family. Yes, it was.
It's interesting to me because Rio sort of started that feeling, and then he wasn't even there much after 1906.
No, he wasn't part of it.
He just felt like he had done, and he didn't want to change with the times, and there was no more challenge, and
no.
He just more or less left everybody else to run.
1950,
June of 50.
50. I must have been 49 then. I met him.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Well,
how did you meet him?
Well, I was interested. I met all the old Lansing people except Durant.
Oh.
I mean, Frank Clark, who built the first Rio, or both Olds with Olds.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I knew him. Edmonds of the Bates and Edmonds was a good friend. I used to go to his house every now and then. We used to. I just drop in and we'd sit down and chat.
What kind of a person was Mr. Edmonds?
Dried up old man, but he was fun. He was alive.
How'd you happen to meet him?
I went. I made a point to meet him. I met Bonnet, the Bonnet steamer.
Was he living here?
Yeah, he was living here. He had driver's license number 1 for the state of Michigan.
Oh, my.
So
my.
Proud of that.
Oh,
yeah.
My.
That's still, the Bonnet Electric is still the same family.
Yes, yes.
And
Clark, no, he was the young man who he and R.E. wheeled the little three-wheel car out of his dad's shop.
Yeah.
Yeah. In the 1880s,
1890s,
right?
Yeah,
in the 80s.
But what was interesting was all these people disliked him.
Yeah.
Disliked why did they dislike
him? They felt, I think, to a man, even Horace Thomas.
Who was?
He was his chief engineer. Even the Thomas family felt that R.E. climbed on their backs.
Oh. For his own personal gain?
Yeah. I think that was it. I worked in a place called Autobody, not the original Autobody factory, but an Autobody shop. And the man who was their upholsterer was the man who upholstered the car out here.
Mm. The real Royale?
No, the 18.
The original.
The original.
Oh, the 1897 old.
1897.
He did the upholstering.
He did the upholstering. And he and Clark. In fact, I think that's why I went and met Clark, because he was telling me, Clark's still alive, he's living in Mason.
Oh.
And I think that's why I went to meet Clark, was because, and I can't remember his name for the life of me.
The man who did the upholstery.
The man who did the upholstery. He didn't even do
it. And did he say why, or just because of those business dealings?
Well, his comment was, Olds published a book about that, those first days, he said, and he never even mentioned me.
Oh.
And Clark felt the same way?
And Clark felt the same way. Well, Clark told me that Olds stole his truck. See, he was building the Clarkmobile truck.
I see.
And I've looked at I've looked at Clarkmobile truck pictures, and I've looked at real truck pictures, and I can't see that they're that similar.
If they're not, huh?
I don't think so. But Clark told me himself, real. He said, I sent my truck over to Olds, and before he was building trucks, and sent my truck over and said, Ari, why don't you market this with your car? He said, you kept it, you kept it, and I began to send him messages, send my truck back. He said, finally I had to go over and get it. He said, the next year out he came with a truck.
Mm.
He said, it was my truck.
And there was no way he could put a litter.
No, I don't think they really looked a lot alike. But anyway, Clark felt that way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What kind of things did you talk about with Olds when you said that?
Well, I wrote him and asked if I could meet him. And I got a postcard back from Florida. He was down in Florida. And you've got that card here somewhere. I mean,
oh, good.
The museum has it.
I hope it's in our records.
Yeah, well, I gave it to the museum. And he said, I'll be home so-and-so time. Give me a ring. Something like that. So I called, and he said, come on over, and I went over. And
where'd you go?
To his house.
He was on the corner of Maine and Washington?
Yeah. And what I found out after I'd been there about 20 minutes was he wanted to know if I knew, you know what the baby Rio is?
Sure.
You know,
where it was?
Where it was.
He wanted to know its locality.
He wanted to find it, and he wanted to get it. And I, frankly, at the time, had never heard of it.
Oh.
You see, it's been about 49, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I told him, no, I didn't know where it was. And because he found that out, he was done. And
he had no further use for me.
He had no further use for me. And so the interviewing was over. And that's when I began to think that maybe Clark and some of the other people had a point.
Mm.
What did you were in the living room of his house or in his den?
Oh, we were not in the room with the pipe organ. We were in the downstairs living room.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
I understand it was a beautiful place.
Well, it was dark and dreary.
Was it really?
Yeah.
Old-fashioned.
Old-fashioned.
Lots
heavy.
Of dark paneling.
Victorian.
Mm,
yeah.
Very.
Things had already changed a lot.
It was a shame that they tore it down.
I think so, too. Someone was telling me about the turntable.
I'll call for you if you, I didn't know you were here. Also, have you... So anyway, he didn't remember it at all.
Uh-huh.
And I never did find out.
Did REOs appear to be a very friendly name when you first went in?
No. Very formal.
No warmth there in his greeting to you, or...
He was proper.
Just businesslike.
Businesslike. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. But once we got done, I didn't know where the baby Rio was.
Where is the baby Rio? Does anyone know?
Oh, yeah. It's out Teague.
Teague owns it.
Teague. Isn't Teague dead now?
Oh, I didn't know.
Well, I thought he
Richard
was.
Richard Teague? No,
yeah.
I didn't know that.
Well,
it's possible. It's very possible. In California, anyway.
In California.
Oh, it's out in California.
There was, you know, this very nicely bound magazine. It's a hardbound magazine called Automobiles. They had an article on it, and he has the full-size reel, just like the baby.
Oh.
We had them both here for a time.
Yes, they were both here in the
museum. Back in 1980.
Because I've seen pictures of the baby, Rio.
Oh, they're
cute.
We had them both here. I don't know when they came. They were here when I came in 85, and they were here till 86, I think.
Now, did you ever meet Richard Scott?
No.
You didn't?
No.
Okay. I don't remember when he died, but...
I think previous to the times that I was trying to meet people.
Okay. It's possible because he wasn't around after the 20s anyway, so...
When you met Mr. Edmonds, you said he was very old then. What kind of person was he?
Well, as I say...
Did you say much about being...
Oh, yes. I go on with the stories he told me, because when I first met him, I said... I was trying to get pictures of everything then.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked him if he had pictures. And I can see this now that I know the building and so forth. He said, you know, Bates and I, he says, I suppose we made 25 cars. He said, and we lost our pants.
On the Bates mobile.
On the Bates. And he said, when we decided to quit that, he said, we were so sick of that venture, we took all the papers for the Bates and Edmunds Company and threw them in the middle of the floor of the factory and burned them.
Oh,
right, is that
Lord.
Right? All that history.
Right, it makes a historian like me cringe to think
yes.
about such a thing.
And the factory was out here, of course.
And the factory was here, yeah.
And the little building that's inside, it was the office portion.
Mm-hmm.
And then the warehouse out in back was the actual factory where the cars were built.
Yeah.
What period of time were they building cars?
Oh, they were building cars.
Like 1910 or?
Oh, before.
Oh, before.
I think probably I'd say 8 to 11, somewhere along in there. We could look it up here if we wanted to know exactly.
I wonder if there's any of those cars that have survived.
No, I don't even know of any.
Is that right?
Of course, he built a tractor,
yeah.
And they built engines.
Did any of these old timers talk about what they thought were the big changes that occurred, how things had changed from the time that they got started at the beginning of the century? How the guys who own the companies change, or how the workers have changed?
No, I never heard anything on that particularly. I think the one thing, and I don't think a lot of people realize this when they think of the car companies from 1900 to, say, 19 to the World War One.
Yeah, the first two decades.
And it was one reason why there were so many of them. Anything that was built that would run could be sold.
Yeah. And it didn't take much capital to get going.
No,
either.
No.
Not like building a multi-million dollar plant. You could just get a couple of guys together in a back room
and especially if you had an
out.
Engine to buy, and there were engines for sale. I mean, Olds was making them, for one.
Yeah.
And, for example, there's the Snyder car, which belonged, the last I knew, to the people over in Lake Odessa. I can't say their name. Anyway, they bought it. But the Snyder car was built here in town. Now, he put a motor on a buggy. He built a very fancy automobile. I met him. And then, of course, there was the Greenleaf.
Greenleaf?
Which was Smith Clausen. Remember Clausen Floors?
Yes.
Smith Clausen was the engineer.
Oh.
And they built at least three. But they were a bicycle company.
Yeah, that was very common.
Yes.
In Europe, in particular,
bicycle.
To go from bicycle to cars.
Mm-hmm. The bicycle and the carriage, you put
That's
it together
right.
and put an engine on it.
The Pope, Toledo, all that was bicycle.
Uh-huh.
And, let me see, I'm trying to think. Of course, there was the New Way Engine Company here in town.
New Way, I've heard that. Right.
And Frank Newborough, and I forget the other guy's name, but his name was Way, but I can't remember.
Wonderful name.
Yeah.
And of course, they bought Clark out. And nobody is sure whether there actually was a New Way car or whether it was a Clarkmobile with a different name on it.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And no one's real sure on that.
When did it all happen here? Did anyone
It didn't much very much happen
here. In Lansing, I meant.
It didn't. Lansing, as far as numbers go, is rather pale compared
uh-huh.
to a lot of places.
Well, certainly compared
to... It just happened that two of them went.
Got bigger. I see. Okay.
They got the financial backing.
And they got the financial backing. They built a good car. Of course, the Oldsmobile nearly went under in about 1910 to 12.
Mm-hmm.
When they went into that great big limited. And the Oldsmobile just squeaked by.
Mm-hmm.
And
RV went down when he wouldn't come up with anything new and then came back up a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
But Lansing, back then in the teens, was considered an important producer, a center for car production.
Yeah. Of course,
right.
Now it's the biggest in the
United
States.
That's
yeah.
right. I know that. That's right.
And, which is surprising. I mean, I think when they say Detroit now, they just mean the car industry.
Right.
Because there's nothing in Detroit.
There's not much in Flint anymore, either.
No, not much.
Well, they just moved the whole V6 line to Flint, but...
Oh, back there, huh?
Yeah, it's gone out of BOC here. The building's empty.
Is it?
It's all been taken over to Flint.
But I'm just very curious. I mean, obviously people have talked about Michigan, you know, why Michigan?
Yeah.
But so much in the history that I read, they always talk about Detroit Ford, GM Flint, but never Lansing.
Never Lansing. I mean, of course, for a little while with the Durant, Lansing was big.
Mm-hmm. In the 20s, with Rio and Oldsmobile, it was huge.
Yeah, Durant and Oldsmobile and Rio.
Mm-hmm.
And Duplex.
Mm-hmm.
Although Duplex never was big. And Fisher Body.
Fisher, right, that's right.
And Pruden and Motor Wheel.
Well, Pruden Wheel became Motor Wheel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it was just I think you'd have a hard time putting your finger on whatever really did it.
Yeah.
Other than there were some good people and General Motors went, and so therefore Oldsmobile went and Fisher Body went.
Uh-huh.
Durant was a big moving force. And
Durant, almost. Did it?
And two, the times were right. Everybody was scrambling to produce cars.
Well, of course, the late 20s was a great time for a lot of people. I think that probably the 20s was the first time that the working man actually began to really get money.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think you're right. They were coming off the farms and...
They were coming off the farms, and they were working in the factories, and they were buying cars for the first time.
Life was improving for their families.
Life was improving. They were getting nicer houses, and they were sending their kids to college, or at least thinking about it, and all that sort of thing. I think probably the 20s was a pretty important year. I mean, decade.
Yeah, that's the one I'm concentrating on my own work, actually.
It's almost a huge revolution, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it was. Agriculture
to machines.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. And
a lot of the production techniques changed in the 20s in the factory too.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. Mass production, really.
That's right. Came into its own.
Mm-hmm. Although, of course, the firearms industry had done it.
In the Civil War. A long time before that.
Long time, yeah. 50 years before.
And even before that, in Europe, they had a production line going. So REOs capitalized on that too. It strikes me every time I talk about this or think about it that there's nothing new under the sun, you'll appreciate things, but there isn't. Whatever has been produced before you, you take that idea and you make it better, and then the next person takes your idea and makes it better, and nothing's really brand new.
I got a letter from a man the other day, and he was saying, well, after all, he says, fuel injection has been here 40 years. Heck, it's been here since, I think it was the Knox in 1904 had fuel injection.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Where was the Knox produced?
Oh, I don't know.
I mean, that was out of Michigan?
No.
Oh, Ohio or something.
I think it was Indiana, Ohio, one of those. But I have an ad for a dual injected, and I think it was a Knox.
Funny. And what about, do I want to say automatic transmission?
Yeah.
Well, I have a reel now that I say is a basket case. It's got the automatic transmission.
Right, and reel was the first car to have that, right?
Yeah.
In the United States.
Yeah. Well, no. You'll find some car that had it before 1910. There were the Carter car was a variable speed clutch. There were all kinds of innovations before 1915.
Uh-huh. Didn't Benz have one like that?
I don't know. But Rio's self-shifter was a little different.
The self-shifter, that's what I was trying to
think of. I've got two of them, two self-shifters.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, is it getting the kind of things you want?
Oh, sure.
It's interesting, too, because each interview we do, some other little piece comes out that we talked to you about some of the auto pioneers that you met. We've not had that experience before. It all fits into the big picture.
Well, when I met Frank Clark, of course, Frank Clark left Lansing and I think went to Pontiac. Anyway, he built a truck there, which was for a while relatively successful.
Mm-hmm.
And when I met him in Mason, he had a shop out behind his house and he was producing one at a time.
Oh, my.
In
the 40s?
In the 40s. One at a time, house trailers.
Oh, he was.
Mm-hmm.
Hand built almost.
Hand built, wooden frame with a metal skin.
Oh, my goodness.
They look quite a bit like, as I remember them, quite a bit like the Airstream.
I was just going to say an Airstream. Mm-hmm. They're rounded in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how he was making a living. Though.
That was what he was doing when I talked to him. He was very busy working on it.
Now, see, that's I see as a huge difference between the early guys who pioneered in the automobile industry and the ones who came later.
Like Tucker, you mean?
These early guys, they were the hands-on engineers.
They were.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, Olds had no training.
That's right. The later guys were more business administrators.
Yes.
They knew how to oversee large corporations.
Olds had no engineering training, and yet he realized, I think, how badly he missed it when he gave the MSU the money to...
For the engineering?
Build a new building when
building.
It burned. My dad was there when it burned.
He was.
My father had a clothes pressing shop on the campus.
Right on the campus.
Right next door to the old building. Or the original engineering building. Of course, when they rebuilt it, they built it so it looked just like the other one. And he said that he and his partner picked up their steam presses and carried them out of the building because they thought it was going to burn. And the next day, he said it didn't burn. They wanted to take him back in. It took six people to carry the same presses back in.
That adrenaline rush.
That adrenaline.
How did the fire start? Totally gutted the building.
It gutted it.
And then it
really gutted it.
He donated the money and it was rebuilt.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But to get himself started in business, he didn't need that. You know, at least in the early days.
No, his father was building engines.
Yeah, when he just took over his dad's shop. Forced his brother Wallace out, more or less, is what
I don't know if he forced him out, but knowing what the others thought of him, maybe he did.
Yeah. Now, I've read some very shady accounts of his brother in the early teens.
Yeah,
and
I've heard
his brother tried to organize a union among the workers.
Yeah, I've heard.
And that was a point of big contention between them.
And that's why he bought him out or got him out.
Yeah.
Wanted him to
the machinist union, in fact, because in those days, of course, most of the workers were... consider themselves machinists.
Yeah.
You don't know anything about that, huh?
Well, I know they did.
Except to what I just told you.
Yeah,
but that's about all I can find out. It's very tantalizing.
I don't know about his brother. No.
Yeah.
I probably read this on the
same thing.
Yeah.
There aren't too many records anywhere or articles that I've read about him other than just a hint at things like that.
Right. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
It's very interesting.
And then I understand, too, as Olds got older, he embellished the stories.
Oh, I see.
Yes, that's why the...
that's why the first biography was...
The Yarnell book.
Yeah, not considered a very good book.
No. And there's some things out of the Niemeyer book, too, that aren't. I just ran across something the other day. I was going to show you. It's on. But I think everybody realizes that the other one, the Yarnell book, was really ghostwritten by R.E. to make... And as you look at things back down the years, you want to recall the good things, and you want your record to go on looking good.
And maybe you just simply want some propaganda out there, too.
Yeah.
And I'm sure he was aware of how some of these people felt. Now, down in the State Library are the two photo albums of the Clark family.
Oh. I'll have to check that out.
Oh,
they're in the State Library?
They're down in Joanne's.
In
the Lansing Public Library.
Yeah,
Oh.
Yeah, but it's called the State. I don't know why.
In the Lansing History Room?
In the Lansing
downstairs.
History Room.
Okay.
And,
you have to be quick if you can do that.
I know.
There are pictures in there of parties given by Clarks. And the Oldses are there. And there's pictures in there of Clarks and Olds and the women and the men out in their car and their children doing
taking
things together, taking drives. Yeah.
Maybe on a social level they could meet.
So they were friends up till at least 10 or 12.
Hmm.
And I'm sure that he realized that these people wouldn't speak to him anymore.
And they really wouldn't speak
and
to him.
And they really wouldn't. No, they didn't like him. And I'm sure, he wanted to...
He was also setting his sights beyond Lansing.
Well, he was
after a point.
Yeah.
He was a business entrepreneur,
yeah,
too.
He was.
Cars were just a means...
Well, he actually got tired of cars.
Really loved, right, after he pioneered it and done what he wanted to do, then his interest left. Yeah. It wasn't as exciting anymore.
It wasn't exciting anymore. Real estate was exciting to him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And traveling.
And maybe he changed. Because he did a lot with trying to make life better for some people.
He did a lot for Lansing, didn't he?
Well, he did a lot in Florida with his retirement places and so forth. He was going to make money at it, sure.
Mm-hmm.
But it also, he knew, was a gamble. And he wanted retired ministers to have a place to go.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know whether he wanted retired old, real people to have a place to go. I don't know.
Wanted it to be a place where his workers could go, too, I think, from what I've read.
Sort of a utopian community.
Yeah, mm-hmm. You know, they put their time in, long years mm-hmm. at the Rio, that they would have a place that they
place
could
to go.
There again, that paternalistic thing comes through again.
Yeah, it does.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think it's so interesting to think that this started so long ago, but this feeling persists all the way down through the 70s. You spoke about it.
Yeah.
Did
you see, when you were working there, or from people that you knew that worked there, did you see any of the kind of programs that the Rio offered the workers? I've asked you already about the clubhouse, but other kinds of things?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
I don't know why. I didn't feel a part of that.
Maybe you weren't there long enough.
Well, I might not have been there long enough, and my boss was not there very long.
Oh, okay.
Mm.
And
Mr. Palmer.
Yeah, because, you know, people talked about sports teams and there was mutual benefit society. People could get
money.
There was a band and right.
All those kinds of things.
Right.
Well, one thing you might want on here is there was a football star from MSU named John Pringle. I think there's an R in it. Not Pingle, but Pringle, I'm sure. He came to Rio as sales manager while he was there.
I think we've heard about this from somebody else, didn't we?
Last week we interviewed Hilda Smith. I don't know if you ever had a chance to meet her. She was in personnel.
I don't remember.
And when she retired, they gave her this big party and the big, beautifully leather-bound album. And there was a picture of him in there and her.
Okay.
And then the little cartoon sketch of him chasing behind her with this football. And she's saying, no, I don't want to talk about football again. and he was saying...
Well, a lot of us at the time thought he got the job because of his name. But he was an awfully nice person. How good a job he did, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
He was there probably 6 months over that with me.
Okay. Mm. And was he hired for his skills on the field as opposed to in the office?
Je ne sais pas.
Let the record note that he made a face. Because you can't see him on tape.
Yeah, he was a very nice person. I liked him. And we seemed to enjoy each other a little bit.
But the company was still interested in those kinds of activities,
mm-hmm.
too, obviously,
mm-hmm.
enough to even look into hiring somebody for their sport skills.
Mm-hmm.
And the teens, of course, they were really into having good football, baseball teams for the city leagues.
That's right. We heard about that from someone, didn't we?
Yeah.
They would hire people that were good in those areas.
And Rio won the city championships.
Did they?
Yeah, in the late 13, 14, 15, something around there. Yeah, that was very important to the company, apparently, that they would do that, make a good showing. So...
That promotes togetherness, too.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, out in the plant, there was a feeling of we.
Uh-huh. Even with the union being there.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So it wasn't necessarily was them or up
no.
against us.
Oh.
Like it is now.
Right.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
You can't possibly have loyalty to the company if you belong to a union.
Yeah. No, there was, I didn't ever feel that. I didn't join because there was no union of the office workers. But the men out there were together. I mean, I think everybody felt we're making a good truck. We want it to be good.
Pride.
Mm-hmm, pride.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember, I suppose you were living in Lansing then, when the big train wreck was right there on the north side of the clubhouse?
I sure do, because I was right down there.
Really? You saw it?
I didn't see it happen. I was right there afterward.
Mm.
My best friend and I, we jumped our bicycles and we went right straight down there. I've got some very nice pictures of it.
Oh, my.
Oh, yeah.
I recall something about it ticking off the switch tower.
Yeah. Took off the switch tower. killed a little newsboy.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, killed a newsboy who was standing there on the platform.
At the railroad depot.
At the railroad depot.
Ready to deliver papers.
And, of course, it went right through the end of the depot.
Oh, it did.
And there was a man sitting in his car. I have a picture of this. There was a man sitting there in his car and waiting for somebody at the depot. And he saw it start to happen, and he leaped out of his car and ran as hard as he could, and a freight car rolled right over his car. And here is his car, just engine high, and a door sticking out from under that freight car. I have that picture that I took it.
For goodness sake.
And
there were cars all over.
Railroad cars all over. It took off the signal tower and.
When was this in the 30s?
36.
It must have been right along in there.
I think I was 4 or 5 when it happened.
Yeah. Well, I was avid photographer then, and I went down with my camera and took pictures.
Oh my goodness!
We didn't have a car. We'd have done the whole neighbors, and I guess the jungle telegrams or whatever. But everybody suddenly knew about it, and somebody came and took us to.
And I remember we were walking along, and all of a sudden we realized we were walking in something. It was going, and it was red, and we thought, oh my God.
I hope it's not blood.
But it was grapes.
Oh, that were in the
crushed.
Oh, in one of the cars. And the engineer, or any, I can't.
No, just the one kid.
Just the one little boy. Just was in the wrong spot.
Just in the wrong spot at the wrong time.
Oh, that's awful.
Yeah. But it went through the end of the wall, the depot, and of course showered people with bricks and so forth. But and then people were hurt. But, one boy was
killed. Gee, that must have been a big panic.
What must have been?
Thought they were being bombed or something,
You know, now we have all this emergency equipment to respond.
Oh, yes.
But in the 30s?
30s, maybe.
I just have a couple of more questions.
Yeah.
I still want to get back to this feeling about the company and the family feeling that you mentioned, that you had a lot of pride in the production of this good truck. And I just want to know if you can speak a little bit more about how, and I know you weren't working down there making the trucks or anything, but do you think that the workers that did had a sense that the company was going to reward them for their loyalty and their good service, you know? So it was not just that they were making a good truck, but that the Rio took care of its people.
The Rio took care of its people. Rio had this very much anticipated retirement program.
Okay.
That Rio was not going to let them ever abandon them.
Right. So if they put their time in, they were okay.
They put their time in and they had earned it.
Okay.
And Rio was going to do the right thing. I'm sure that was the way they felt. And the other thing that I was always kind of impressed was how young I was compared with most of the workers.
Oh.
See, those workers there, a lot of them were 30s and 40s and 50s and 60s.
Yeah, right. So they just didn't let guys go because they got older. Mm-mm. They kept them on.
If they could do anything and wanted to, they kept them on.
Right, we've heard that too. Even when people got disabled, they may not have been able to pay a whole lot for their hospitalization or their lost wages, but people mentioned that if they couldn't work the line, they would work an elevator.
Yeah.
Or they'd find something else for them to do.
Yeah.
So REO's really